Michael Lewis, let's talk a little about Moneyball and underdogs. Moneyball has become this controversial book that some people like Joe Morgan refuse to read, and it's actually entered our lexicon, which is something that you could never have imagined.
No, in fact, it's very funny. I thought I was going to call the book Underdogs until I realized it was a sequel and I wanted to call it Underdogs. It's funny what's happened, and the sources of hostility are interesting in and of themselves. I think that the obvious source of hostility is that people who were in a business that hasn't changed in a long time and they've been doing it the same way for a long time are naturally threatened by a new way of doing business. And that's the kind of the dull source of hostility. But there's a whole other strain of hostility that I think is a kind of anti-market sentiment. I mean, what the A's have done is bring market-like thinking to the evaluation of baseball players. Because they have no money to spend on their team, they have to find cheap assets. They have to find value, like Warren Buffett has to find value. And when I was with them, they were doing it by finding guys who got on base. And on-base percentage was an undervalued attribute in a baseball player, and they'd been buying it for the previous few years. And I think for the last few years, they think they have a better measurement of defensive ability, and they've been buying guys whose defense is more valuable than people know, or assembling teams based partly on that. But that kind of thinking is anathema to a certain kind of baseball fan and a certain kind of baseball announcer, and they don't understand it, and they don't want to understand it, and so they get upset.
Now, there's more to it than that. In an interview you did for Athletics Nation, you mentioned something that I found odd, which is that in discussing the baseball draft, there have never been any gauges to show whether one is successful or not.
Well, it is an amazing thing because evaluation of baseball players has always been a subjective judgment, amateur baseball players especially. You know, it's just the scout's gut feeling whether this guy or that is going to make it or not. And that's one thing, you know, not to have introduced a more objective way of evaluating the players into the process. But not to have objectively evaluated the scouts themselves is another thing. You could have kept a record of what scouts recommended and then asked whether the scouts were any good at what they did, but nobody does that. And this was driven home to me, actually not by the A's, but by the Toronto Blue Jays. When J.P. Ricciardi, the GM of the Blue Jays, took over, he had all these books where they actually had kept scouts, they were dusty books where they had kept old scouting reports, you know, and these reports said, you know, Randy Johnson will never make it as a big league pitcher and Jim Edmonds is a minor league center fielder and on and on and on. And huge mistake after huge mistake. And no one ever gone through and looked at these things. And it was just, he went through it and it was just, there was no pattern at all. They were right, wrong as often as they were right. There were not any particular kind of mistakes. It was just a mess. And so he started trying to pay attention to which scouts said what, and so he could evaluate the scouts. But yes, it's true that there's been no quality control in scouting, and so this book does introduce the notion that maybe there should be, and that doesn't make people happy.
Well, the other thing is there's a lot of gloating over the fact that De Podesta, who was Billy Bean's assistant, failed in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
as if somehow only Billy Bean has the brains to make it successful, and now they're coming down hard on Ricciardi.
Look, this is a holy war. It really is evolutionary theorists versus creationists. It's not a rational argument taking place. And what happens is any time the other side can find a person who they can use as a weapon, they do. And of course it's silly to say that only Billy can do it, because Theo Epstein, who's the GM of the Boston Red Sox, will tell you that's how we won the World Championship.
And now they're attacking him because Boston...
Right. didn't do so well this year. Billy Bean is funnier on the subject than I am, because he's forever picking up the newspaper and finding people he's never spoken to, explaining exactly why he's successful and what he's doing with his baseball team and how he's doing it. And they have no idea. And so the latest fad, as the A's approach a playoff berth, is to say that, oh, yes, well, yeah, they're getting the playoffs this year, but now, finally, it has nothing to do with Moneyball because they're good at defense. And in Moneyball, they're bad at defense. Billy said, we're doing exactly the same thing we've always done. We're looking for undervalued players. We're trying to find value in baseball players. We're using statistics to do it in objective analysis, and we don't invest in anything we can't measure. It's exactly the same stuff. The team does look different because the market's changed. On-base percentage is now overvalued. You got to find other things to do. But nevertheless, you've got columnists in the Bay Area writing with total certainty that actually what Billy's doing is completely different. You know, what can you say? They can write whatever they want.
Now throw in something else that you also said in that interview, which is it seems to be that now the A's are beginning to look more closely at the human component of what's going on.
Well, this is a curious misperception, both of the book and of what they're doing now, I think. But there was always some ambiguity about this, about sort of the knee-jerk judgment about character that a lot of baseball people make when they're evaluating baseball players, and the A's claim to avoid. Because Billy was, even as he was pretending to be so objective, he was capable of perfectly subjective based actions. And he did make those judgments from time to time and act on them without any kind of rational reason for doing them. Now, what the A's have done, especially in employing Milton Bradley and Frank Thomas in the offseason, they've got the notion out there that what they're doing is finding value in other people's problem children. That when a player gets labeled a bad character, that's usually overblown. And there's some truth to that, in that a lot of these players, the problem isn't that they're bad characters. The problem is they're in a bad environment, and the team's losing. And when the team's losing, problems are magnified. And you put them on a good team, and that doesn't have these environmental problems, and they become good citizens.
But this is also nothing new, because this is what Al Davis was doing for years with the Raiders.
Well, that's a very good point. It's a very good point. Yes, that's a very good point. In football, however, there's an outlet for anger and bad behavior. Baseball, there's less of one.
How does Billy Beane view the fact that, to some degree, you spilled the beans on what he was doing?
That's a good question. I remember when the galley of Moneyball came out. So reviewers got it, and that's when Billy in the A's front office saw it. And they had no idea what it was up to. And he called, and he was upset. He was disturbed, anyway, when he first read it. And I thought he was going to be disturbed because I'd done just that. I'd spilled the bean. I laid out this blueprint of what the most efficient franchise in baseball was doing, it and doing my best to tell everybody their secrets. And it turned out he wasn't upset about that. He was upset that he was quoted using curse words, and his mother was going to be upset that he cursed all the time. And and I said, "But Billy, come on. The thing you really should be upset about is everybody's now going to know what you're doing." And he laughed at me, and he said, "You don't think anyone in baseball is going to read your book?" And I think he really believed that nobody in baseball was going to read it. And I kind of did, too. Now, enough people in baseball now have been kind of forced to read the book one way or another. So it wouldn't be true to say that no one in baseball has read the book. But his point still stands, because people read what they want to read and believe what they want to believe. And the truth is that there's still a lot of inefficiencies in the market that shouldn't exist, and a lot of poor judgments being exercised because although people read the book and understand what the A's do, they refuse to believe that actually there's any validity to it.
There's a comment in the interview where you say eventually the A's will lose that edge because people will figure it out. But my response to that is, aren't there just an infinite number of ways to skin a cat?
Well, there are a number of ways to skin a cat. It is true that it's harder for them to function now than it was when I was in their front office, because the Red Sox and the Blue Jays and, well, my goodness, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays just hired some guy from Goldman Sachs to run themselves. I mean, there are plenty of teams in baseball that are now fishing in the same pond. So a number of good deals the A's would have had 3 or 4 years ago, they can't have now. And if you're building your team out of inefficiently valued defensive players, there's less bang for your buck there than there is in inefficiently valued offensive players. If you can get a cheap offensive threat, it just makes that much more difference. So their edge is vanishing as we speak. They have players in the pipeline. This is something that's going to happen gradually. But I'd be surprised 10 years from now if the same discrepancies exist in baseball payrolls, if the A's are going to the playoffs and winning their division.
Except for the occasional year like the Marlins, where you just get a new team and come up. That may be the model, actually, is you dump a team after 4 years for the best possible prospects. 2 years later, you have a two-year window of opportunity, and then you dump them again.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting model. It's true. That is one way to do it.
Michael Lewis, your next book may or may not be Underdogs, but now Underdogs itself deals with, from what I understand, four players in particular, Nick Swisher, Joe Blanton, Mark Teen, and a guy who retired. Is that correct?
No. Nick Swisher is certainly going to be a big part of it. The guy who retired, Steve Stanley, is likely to be a pretty big part of it. Mark Teen is likely to be a big part of it. Joe Blanton is unlikely to be a big part of it. And there are half a dozen other players who will be important to it. I still can't tell you which ones completely, because it will be the ones that serve the to illustrate the points and to serve and serve the narrative. And there's still a pool of, I don't know, 15 players in the minor leagues, some of whom are going to be big league players. Shane Comini, the pitcher who they brought up for a couple of starts, I mean, I think he's got quite likely a very bright future coming out of the bullpen. And if he does, that's a career that I may not want to just leave on the cutting room floor. There may be some interest there. So I haven't figured out exactly who's going to be the main characters.
Well, when you look back on that 2002 draft and you're following all of this thus far, now granted a few players, Blanton, Swisher, and Teen in particular, have gotten to the majors already, but the A's had a huge number of first-round draft picks. How do you rate that from your own understanding of drafts?
It was more complicated than they had a lot of first-round draft picks, because they couldn't pay them like first-round draft picks. So they had to draft a number of people who weren't generally rated as first-round draft picks in the first round and cut special deals with them where they paid them lower-round money. So the way you would evaluate it is look at what they got for the money they spent, I think, is probably the best way in the context of that draft. So the question is, did they get more than their share of, given the money they spent, did they get a disproportionate share of the talent that was available that year? And that is a question you cannot answer until you know how the talent panned out. And you, there's another 2 or 3 years before you can really make definitive statements about that.
This is going to be a kind of oddball question, but it's something I'm curious about. We've got old guard versus new, conservative versus whatever the opposite is. Politically, is this new generation politically more liberal than their predecessors? I mean, baseball's very conservative. So, I mean, Theo Epstein, I know, is a staunch Democrat. But in terms of some of the others, the Oakland Brain Trust.
As opposed to the players.
Yeah.
The players exhibit a total indifference to politics. But the management is very conservative. Billy's a Republican. Paul DePodesta's a Republican. They like Ayn Rand. They have a lot of those views. We agree to disagree on a lot of this stuff. But not only are they conservative, I think, you know, the truth is if you poke them hard enough, what you'd find is a social liberal and an economic conservative. That's what they are. But tribally, they're Republicans. Interestingly, there was a piece in the New York Times Magazine yesterday that had Ken Melman, the chairman of the Republican Party, giving a speech where he's telling the faithful that they're the party of Moneyball. And they dragged Billy into the White House not that long ago to talk to them about how his strategies might apply to a national campaign. And I think he left wondering what the hell was that all about. But nevertheless, there is some natural affinity between what they do and that political party.
Except for the social liberal part.
Their particular political views are probably irrelevant to the Republican Party. But the fact that they are sneaking around trying to find value and use their money smartly and all the rest sounds a little bit more Republican than Democrat.
So Theo Epstein is kind of an anomaly.
I don't know. You can generalize. I don't think baseball management attracts one kind of cat as opposed to another. If I had to guess J.P. Ricciardi in Toronto, I guess he's a Democrat, but I don't know. And I would guess they're all, to the extent that they think about it much, what they think is they kind of want the government out of their lives. They don't care much what anybody does as long as it's not hurting anybody else. So it's a kind of libertarian streak.
Well, you've now spoken with several people over the years, Liars, Pokers, New Thing, and Next. You talked to Silicon Valley people. You've spoken with football people. You've spoken with baseball people. Do you think that the smarter ones are interchangeable among all of them?
That the guy who's the smart guy on Wall Street could be the smart guy in baseball and smart guy in Silicon Valley? No, they're all a little different. I think that each little arena of ambition requires slightly different traits to succeed in them. They themselves might not say this. You know, when you get to the kind of the elite tier of American economic life, when they're all in a room together from different walks of life, they tend to come out thinking they're all kind of the same. They tend to come out thinking, oh, we're all just the winners. And the winner has something in common. But if you took the typical Wall Street guy and put him in Billy's job, I think what would happen to him is what happened to Paul in DePodesta in Los Angeles, that he would be dismissed because he didn't have an athletic past. his inability to beat everybody in the clubhouse up would actually cost him. Billy, you know, there's a huge kind of law of the jungle thing going on with Billy over at the A's. The fact that he is the physical presence he is, and he can impose reason with violence if he has to, is a big, big deal. I think that the Silicon Valley people, they're a really completely different breed. Jim Clark, who's the main character of the new thing, he would last about a week on Wall Street. He doesn't have the interest in the social interaction, much less the capacity for it. And he's a much more a kind of detached character, geeky. You know, I mean, that's the shorthand. They're all kind of geeky. So I think they're all a little different.